If I'm not mistaken, you are in Geneva?
Yes, I am in Geneva.
And you are working for FIAN. Could you briefly explain what it is?
Yes, I work for FIAN International, which is an international NGO working for the implementation and promotion of the right to food worldwide. We are working more or less in 50 countries, and I am the representative here in Geneva. And the idea is to see the right to food not as charity, but really as a right that everyone can claim.
And you're doing more than just feeding people then, I suppose.
Exactly. We don't feed the people, we don't get food to the people, but we support people who have been treated of violations of the right to food or are suffering violations of the right to food, as, for example, victims of activities of extractive industries, displaced people, people being discriminated in the access to social programs and others.
And you are part of a global network that's active now. Can you tell me more about that?
Exactly. FIAN is part of the so-called Treaty Alliance, which is a movement of more or less 500 organizations and 200 individuals who have supported the idea to push for a binding treaty on human rights and transnational companies at the UN. And our main goal is really to ensure that binding norms, which are obligatory for states and for companies, are put in place at the UN, at the international level. Our main concern is that since 40 years, civil society has been requesting for this kind of binding norms, and every time what we get are just voluntary regulations, which are discretional both for states and for companies, and that allows that companies can violate human rights, in many cases remaining in the impunity.
Now, this is going in the other direction of what we hear now. We hear a lot about free trade treaties, and in those treaties, apparently, there is some kind of provision which places international companies above the law of local countries.
Exactly. One of the problems that we have is that there is a kind of asymmetry due to this trade agreement, which means we have binding or obligatory norms for the companies, which can always claim if, for example, a state doesn't comply with a contract. And on the other side, we have victims which do not have any possibility to claim if the state would decide to protect them and not the company, where the rights of both are competing. So we have an asymmetry in regulation, in international law, and that, of course, creates a situation of injustice. Moreover, the main problem that we have is that the few regulations that we have for companies abusing of human rights do not really ensure access to remedies or preventive measures for the victims of violations, especially in those cases when states act extraterritorially, which means, for example, if our company in one country, having its home office in one country, produces the damage beyond the borders of this country, normally the victims don't have any possibility to get remedies.
Not even with their own government, then?
In many cases, also not. But let's say in their own government, sometimes the problem is that also the inequalities of power bring sometimes that even if you have a positive decision in a country, you will not have the implementation of this due to the pressure that the company puts on the judicial system or on the government for this decision not to be implemented. And I can give you one quite of old example, which is the Euskadi case. This is a case in which a company closed in Mexico a wool fabric and dismissed 2,000 people. When the people lost their jobs, they weren't really not having any other possibility to get jobs to feed their families and themselves, because the court in Mexico, the Supreme Court, decided in favor of all the workers, but it was impossible to implement this decision. With the time and just through political work of many organizations here in Europe, which participated in the General Assembly of the company and went to the European and the German Parliament, the fabric was opened again and the half was paid to the workers. But that was just through political mechanisms. There was any judicial mechanism in place which should ensure the implementation of the national judicial decision, and that, of course, makes that the implementation is very difficult.
Yes, and it depends on the goodwill of local politicians then.
Exactly. Local or foreign politicians, but it's very difficult really to ensure implementation. It's just a will thing. And normally, not all companies, because there are many companies which are well-minded, but these companies which are abusing of rights normally do not have the will, and even if they have adopted some regulatory measures which are voluntary, they just apply them when they are inconvenient for their profit, but if their profit is affected, in many cases, they do not apply.
So what would you want this treaty to say exactly?
We want that the treaty at least recognizes that transnational companies have to comply with human rights. Second, that regulations are put in place nationally and internationally to control the activities of transnational companies, ensuring that they respect human rights. Third, we would like to see a supervision mechanism at international level to ensure that people who have not the access to remedies at the country level can go to the international level to present their situations or even to claim their situations.
So, for example, if I'm living in a remote area in India and there is a big mining company that is putting things in place there that violate my rights, and my own government says, well, that's just a shame, we are making big profits with the company, so it doesn't matter, then I, as an individual, would be able to appeal to some kind of international institution.
Exactly. That's what we want to have, but of course we cannot say now which would be the whole scope and coverage of this treaty. That's why the Treaty Alliance is asking the Human Rights Council here at the UN in Geneva to first initiate the discussion between states in order to ensure that an intergovernmental open-ended working group begins looking which are the problems and what has to be regulated, and to ensure that this binding regulation is adopted. Of course, we recognize that that takes a long time, but the problem is that until now, in these 40 years, most of the discussions have been always put in the hands of experts, which are have not always been independent. So we think it's time that it is not just a debate of experts, but really that it is a debate that is democratically carried out in the countries by the parliament to ensure that these regulations are in place and are implemented by states. So, as I say, we don't compete with all the voluntary norms that are existing now, but what we want is really to have some process towards this binding treaty, which could take, of course, some time, and therefore the negotiations should begin as soon as possible.
Now, this week, apparently, there is a session of this Commission on Human Rights, and you are planning some actions to push your idea forward?
Exactly. It is the Human Rights Council. That's an international body of the UN where the states members of the UN take part, some of them. And there are two resolutions under discussion. The one is a resolution maintaining the binding norms that are existing, and the other resolution, which has been put on the table by Ecuador, proposes the creation of an intergovernmental working group to ensure that the debate is initiated towards a treaty. What we are doing here is really to talk to the different states' delegations to ensure that they support also the binding treaty. We don't say that they shouldn't support what is existing now, that should continue, but they should go further and initiate the discussion and support the resolution from Ecuador. That's the first. And for that, we have had last week one side event between different organizations, as for example the International Commission of Jurists, the Infant Baby Action Network. We have also the Fédération des Droits de l'Homme, Friends of the Earth, Franciscans International, San Fien, presenting cases from the ground and analyzing why we are needing a treaty. And next week we will have big mobilizations here in Geneva, so people from different countries in the world will be attending, and for that we also will have more or less three side events presenting cases and legal arguments. There will be a people's tribunal organized by the Transnational Institute Setim and the so-called campaign to dismantle corporate power, and we will have also some mobilization of people going to the outside of the UN and also to some of the offices of the big companies in Geneva just to claim to stop impunity.
So you will have a busy week.
It will be very, very, very busy, but we are confident that all this mobilization should bring us a step forward in the process.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I just would like to say that we are a bit concerned because we know that the European states have been very hesitant to this idea to begin working on a treaty. They maintain the idea that we should concentrate first in the implementation of the voluntary norms. That, of course, is very concerning because the European Union has very clear norms on human rights, and we consider that there is a lack of coherence between what is in the papers and what is the role of the EU here in the negotiations.
Absolutely.
Geneva. So we think we really call to the different people from the civil society in the European countries to approach their governance and to say that they should really support the idea of a binding treaty, which doesn't exclude the idea to continue supporting the existing principles that have also been adopted some years ago at the UN.
Okay, Ana Maria Suarez Franco from Geneva, thank you for having us on this Saturday.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.